The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Well, good morning. This is Kevin Cry. This is my show, broadcasting live from the heart of District 1, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You can also listen online, kcnr1460.com. All my episodes are archived as well. You can go to votekevincry.com on the interwebs and pull it up there. You can look back. I actually was talking to someone recently about an episode from like almost a year ago, and they were able to find that. So please go to the website and find those. And I will also be continuing my Facebook Lives at 7 a.m. every Monday on Facebook. So go to Vote Kevin Cry on Facebook, find that, and check that out. It's really interesting because you can always tell the number of views there in the spring. A lot of those videos are getting like, you know, anywhere from, I don't know, 1,500 to 3,000 views. And then you get sometimes some of these videos are getting like 300 and 400 views. And that's just because I think people are just in the summer. They're out at the lake. They're doing things. And the last thing they want to be talking about is politics. And believe me, I understand that. But I know right now that school's back in and kids are and parents are having that routine, taking them to practice and school events, that people are going to start getting more engaged once again. And there's a lot happening, but I will put that on hold for now. So just to give you a breakdown of the show today, I'm going to have Assemblywoman Heather Hadwick here on in a couple minutes, and we will take the first half hour of the show talking everything redistricting and what's happening in Sacramento, and give all of you an opportunity for some inside information coming from our Assemblywoman. And then also on the back half of the show, I'll be breaking down a little bit of some of the stuff at the Board of Supervisors, and I will be taking call-ins after the break, and that would be 530-605-4567. Again, that number is 530-605-4567. So with that, we're going to jump into it. David, is Heather on the line? Or, I'm sorry, Assemblywoman Hadwick.
I am.
Hey, how you doing?
Good morning. I'm good. How about you?
Good morning to you. I'm doing very, very well. I appreciate you waking up and being on with us early. So let's jump into it. And I know we're going to meet later this afternoon and do an interview in my studio that we'll put up on the website. So, again, I'll tell people if you have questions for Assemblywoman Hadwick, you can message me those and I'll ask those this afternoon. But for this, right now, it's all about the redistricting. And so can you start us off, like, from my understanding, with what's happening in Texas, that is a very normal process. It happens under multiple administrations, and this is just part of the republic we live in, or the democratic process. So what's happening in Texas is not remotely what's happening here in California. Is that correct?
Completely, yeah. So it is what's happening in Texas is legal, and they are within their rights to do that. It's being shared as a power grab from Trump and that he encouraged it. The DOJ does it. Yes, he's the president, but this happens in every cycle, every leadership. What's happening in California is against our California Constitution. They actually changed the Constitution so that they could proceed, on Thursday. So, and drawing the maps before they changed the Constitution is completely illegal because the voters voted 15 years ago to have an independent redistricting commission so that politicians weren't drawing their own lines and picking their voters. So it's very tenuous, as you can imagine, down there, and it's very frustrating because I think we're already losing the trust of our people, and I think this is only going to just make that happen 10 times more. And, you know, government has already... We've already lost them, right? So I think in the North State, we tend to know our representatives, and that's not happening in the southern part of the state. And the more I'm down there, the more I'm doing things, I'm actually very proud of North State electeds because I don't know if it's just because we grew up here or we care or care more than normal. I don't know what makes that difference, but we all collaborate. We work together, probably partly out of survival because Sacramento doesn't understand us, but that trust is going to be fractured with this.
So let me ask you a question. You said, 15 years ago the voters passed that. How was it done prior to that vote 15 years ago?
Prior, I think it was a lot of what's happening right now. I think it was politicians and lobbyists and people in a back room making decisions, for their own interests. And this is why this is exactly why it went to the ballot and we wanted it this way, because we don't want politicians making their own minds. I fully believe that people should pick their leaders, not leaders picking their people. This new map changes my district maybe the most, actually, of any other district in the state. I would go from two Republican conservative congressmen to four Democratic congressmen.
Exactly.
Insane.
So, well, one of the biggest, I think, and I know this will hit very home to you and the people in your hometown up in Modoc, but when I saw that it was just north of the Golden Gate Bridge, like Marin County, lumped in with Modoc, I mean, that to me was one of the craziest. It's not like they're hiding it anyway. What are people in that end of the state saying about that? I mean, are they just up in arms, or how are they feeling?
I think everybody in the North State is up in arms, and hopefully, like, I want them to be. I need them to be. I need people talking about it and showing up to vote on November 4th. But Marin County and Modoc County are probably the perfect example, because when they're doing these redistricting efforts with the Independent Commission, they take into account communities of interest, right? And what these communities have in common. I can say Modoc and Marin have very, very little in common. You know, Modoc's one of the most remote and rural counties, and along with one of the poorest in the state, and Marin's one of the richest and most urban. I will now share a congressman with Governor Newsom, because he just bought a $10 million mansion in Marin, which is, it's just baffling. And not to mention, whoever has to represent that district, it's 400 miles and two mountain ranges, very hard to get to. Like, if you were having to travel and spend time in your district, it's going to be that much harder to represent your people and show up. And I can tell you, with confidence, I doubt whoever's in that seat will ever come to Modoc County.
Oh, exactly. Well, or do they even know where Modoc County is?
Yes, so, they won't. No.
Correct. So let me ask you this. On our consent calendar, and I personally, on my own District 1 letterhead, not as chairman, but as just a single supervisor, I sent a letter to Newsom's office, opposing Assembly Bill 604, Senate Bill 280, et cetera. And that was delivered, the day, obviously, he signs it. And then on our consent calendar this week, we're going to be sending a letter, assuming I have three votes, opposing all this anyway. And some people might say, well, what's the point? It's already been signed. It's already moving forward. But I wanted on record that we are, like, absolutely opposed to this. So when you just said you need people to, be loud, be frustrated, make their voices heard on November 4th, my question is, what do you say to the people that say, this is a done deal, this is going through? Like, tell us a little bit more about some hope you have about some of the conversations you've had about polling in very Democrat districts and what voters are saying across the state. Because I have no pulse on that, but do you have a pulse on that?
Yeah, so we are actually very encouraged. So we just did polling last week, just before this got voted through, and it was 65% of people say no. It's on both sides. We had some Democrats that said that abstained or didn't vote for this and have publicly spoke out against it. We tried to amend it, one of them, to add that you could never run for one of those seats if you were involved in it or voted for it, because then you would be having that personal gain. That's one of the rules about being on the Independent Redistricting Commission, that you can't run for a seat that you helped make the lines for, which seems like a basic, logical, fair thing to do. But we're hearing people loud and clear. Now, there are a lot of people that think This is a power grab from the Republicans to do the Texas part, and this is what we're doing in retaliation of that. And they've spoke about that on the other side. We are, you know, I represent Northern California. I want to make sure that California is doing what we need to do for our voters, and I absolutely don't believe that politicians should be drawing their own lines, no matter where they live, no matter what district it is. And we're hearing people loud and clear. There was the public comment for this was only open for like 2.5-3 days, which typically it's open for a month or more. And there was over 16,000 public comments. We have not seen them. They were refused to be put them in the public record. So we don't even know what that, I mean, we have an idea of what the comments were, but they made all of these votes without even reading those comments. So if you are truly doing this in a transparent way and for the people, those would have been those should have been your top consideration, right?
You would think.
But they did not include our party or the vice chair of elections, who, Allie, who, if you have time, go watch the elections committee for Monday. 5.5 hours, but man, our Allie and David held their own and asked questions, and the big question in Sacramento is who drew the map. That is our question. Who drew it? Because nobody will give names, and they say, you know, one time they say the leadership did, one time they say the legislature did. It says on the bill that the assembly did, and we tried to get that removed because we are part of the assembly, and we don't want to be associated with this. Because we weren't. We were not, you know, we were not invited to those tables. So, we will have a huge, call to action and grassroots campaign coming. We're opening an office, in Sacramento, and we're going to have a staff full time working on this because this truly will be historical, and we already don't have a voice, especially in rural California, and now they're completely silencing it. And we have to make sure that we stand up for that.
Well,
because
yeah.
we have to have representation.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the very first things I did when I became chair in 24, in that first year, was move us to caucus as a rural county, not as suburban. Because Shasta County is a rural community. I mean, Redding, the heart of my district, no, that's not rural, but our county as a whole is very rural. And we need to be shoulder to shoulder with like-minded people and embrace the fact that we're rural and be proud of the fact that we're rural. So let me ask you this, because when you talk about engaging voters and mobilizing a movement, you and I both know, as well as anybody else that's been involved in politics, money is a huge, huge factor in getting your message out and getting some things done. I think it was Rush Limbaugh that said, you know, something to the effect of money was the mother's milk of all campaigns, something to that. I mean, I probably botched that, but I had heard that at one time. So let me ask you this. What's this going to cost our state? Because when it comes to fire mitigation and a bunch of other things, they're cutting back. But what is the cost financially the state's going to incur on this ballot initiative on November 4th? And how much have you guys talked about that?
So we've talked about it a lot because that was one of my biggest frustrations. So we have estimates from $235 to $280 million for the state's cost. Now, that will help pay for the counties because I was really worried about them not helping out our counties. And I have 11 rural counties, none of which have budgeted a special election or have the staffing or anything ready to go because nobody knew this was coming. So that will reimburse the counties or give them, they said they're going to give the money up front for them to do this. We'll see what actually happens. But that money is state money out of the general fund. That is more money than we spent for the year for fire mitigation. You know, we're cutting things right and left, and we are already in a deficit of billions of dollars. And now they had told us this year by 27-28, we would be in a $50 billion deficit. I don't think we cut enough this year, I truly don't. I think we should be planning more for the future, and we're not. But I have a hard time because there's a lot of what I call emotional math down there. There's a lot of feelings for programs and feelings for what they think is right and what we have to have. And then there's the math that actually says how bad our fiscal picture is. And they do not coincide. So we're headed into the worst fiscal crisis we've ever had in the state. And then suddenly they've found $250 million. They feel like it's an investment in their future and they're saving democracy. And they are feeling completely fine with spending that much money on this. On the other side of that, to run a ballot, an initiative like this, we're looking at probably $100 million or more.
Wow.
Which is crazy. So that's typically from donors, from the party, that kind of thing. So in my mind, that money could be spent on other things like getting more Republicans into office or, you know, fighting some other fight in the state. But the amount of money, and that's on our side, and our side will be the positive part of this campaign. When you go negative, you have to spend almost twice as much. So they're going to have to spend way more money than us. But it's going to be, the language is going to be very important to pay attention to. We're waiting for the ballot language and the title. We've heard the title, but we don't know if that's going to be the title, so I don't want to announce that. But so we're waiting to see, because this, you know, they can trick you, and it might be a yes instead of a no. So we're waiting on that language. And then we filed to have the opposition language, because sometimes they can use their, you know, they can use politics to get the opposition and the language to put it on the ballot. We want to make sure that we can tell the truth on that opposition language.
So who's leading the effort? Let me ask you this: who's leading the effort for the ballot statement for the opposition? And I won't say, you know, for the yes vote or the no vote, because we don't know what that is yet. But who's leading the effort to making sure the ballot language of the opposition side? I mean, just to make sure, because I know that, you know, both sides can maybe try and circumvent that process and write both, so they're just really confusing. So
yes.
What do you
so on our end, we are working with everyone. So we've had calls about this, I feel like, almost every day for weeks since we knew it was happening. So we're working with the state party, the national party, and then the assembly and senate as well, and so it's a group effort. We have attorneys working with us to make sure that we can not miss anything. Carl DeMaio's been very vocal and has like the ultimate grassroots platform with his Reform California. So he's been helping a lot with that because he has those contacts. And he's very well versed in the data and the polling, and he's the one who ran the polling, like, and he has the funds to back it up to get all that information. So we're all working together, national, state, and the assembly and senate. So and then we will reach out to the central committees as well, and the CRA, and every group there is, and work with them to make sure that we have letters, comments, we're walking, you know, we're knocking on doors, we're sending mailers. There's already been some mailers. I don't know if you've seen them yet. They had mailers out over the weekend.
I'm not allowed to get the mail for some reason. My wife and kids don't let me get the mail. I guess because I don't put it in the right spot every time. But that's okay.
My son's not allowed to either, because yeah, he does the same thing.
So
they're already starting off, but we have a good plan. I'm hopeful that the voters will see through this, because there's no reason to do this.
Yeah.
Truly, if you take out the feeling, this is not what the voters wanted. This is not the way we do things in California. We had the gold standard for redistricting, and basically leadership said, we don't think you're doing that right. Let's take this to the people. But it's what they want, and they went in the back rooms and did it and made the deals. and now they're acting like it's going to the people, and I just don't like that.
Yeah, well, I would challenge you very respectfully on the comment that, you know, in terms of the state being the gold standard and Californians don't do that. Like, we didn't used to do that. And under this current, and I know you have to work with the governor, and I've sent stuff to his office, and I'm actually working with Padilla and Schiff's office on some other stuff, but it's very different now. I can't articulate what it was like 6 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, but I do know in the roughly 3 years I've been involved, the stuff that I see, even just here locally on with AB 969 and other things, there's been multiple things passed to circumvent, you know, the will of the electorate or of the people, and it bothers me. So let me ask you this, and this is along the lines of redistricting. We're going to talk about this more this afternoon, but how surprising has it been around, let's just call it around redistricting, that because you have a very front row seat as to this happens, and obviously there are people that are very for this process, and it is a weaponization, and it's going after the Voting Rights Act, of what we've seen. So how surprising has it been to you to see how aggressive and partisan something like this can be?
I would like to say at this point I was surprised, but I think going in, and, you know, I got elected in November, started right off the bat on December when I got sworn in, so when they allowed me to start, the divide is crazy.
Said about when they allowed you to start. I mean, tell people about that, because that's what I want this show, and not just this episode, but my show in general, to be about, is giving people an insight to politics that they don't ever hear. So explain to them really quick, like, when you use the term, when you were allowed to start. Because I remember, because I know, Mark Mazzano, who's one of your employees or reps, and I know what he had to go through just to be able to get boots on the ground and helping you and go. And so explain to the people that.
Yeah. So everything is run by the Democratic Party because they're the majority party. So including my staff, my budget, my offices, all of the committee chairs are Democrats. So they decide which bills are heard, which ones are not. Absolutely everything. I have to show up in person Monday through Thursday, and they have to see my face. If I am not there, I have to have written permission from the speaker to miss. So, like, this week, my son is starting his senior year, and I'm hosting senior sunrise at my house in the morning on Wednesday morning. So I am not allowed to leave during the week because it's the last part of session. I have to be there by 3 p.m. to check in, or I could be court-martialed, actually. So I am leaving Tuesday afternoon, driving 5.5 hours, doing senior sunrise, and leaving back to Sacramento at 8 a.m. Luckily, it's really early in the morning, so I can make it back. But little things like that you don't think about, right? So if I want to hire somebody, that can be jammed up. So if I, you'll find that some of us are very vocal and some of us are not. We are very strategic in that. Everybody has their role in our caucus. And, sometimes there are bills that those loud, vocal people might want to get through. So we might run a bill for them because we know, like, I kind of stay in the middle. I'm a facts, not feelings girl. I'm kind of the mediator. So I am sometimes loud, sometimes not. But that's my role, right? And now I'm going to be in leadership this year. So and that's why, is because I can work across the aisle because I have to. I need 22 people to vote with me every time, you know? And if I'm bashing the governor and suing him and doing all these things, I'm not going to get my bills heard. But we also need those people on our team so that we can say the things that we need to say sometimes. So everybody kind of has their role. I was impressed with how strategic that is when I got down there. That divide is it's sad to me, honestly. So our staff, some of us have less staff than others than the Democratic Party. They are trying to make the staff more equal because because they're going to unionize them. So they, before the pay was different, the amount of staff you had was different. So they are trying to like levelize that and get that up to parity. I was trying to hire someone that was a retired state employee. That took forever on my side while I was watching other people get their stuff approved. If we need a new office, there's all kinds of things you have to do for security and servers and all that. It takes us about a year as a Republican to get a new office, and the Dems, way faster.
So yeah, same day.
Is hard.
Yeah, it's like they make you have to, if you're equating it from what I understand, this is how I explained it to somebody else as I understood it, was if you were buying a car, they made you, sign something that was, 50% down, 20% interest, prepayment penalties, and the other side gets, 5 years, same as cash, no down. And it was like, geez, it was so the disparity.
All of our travel is approved ahead of time. So we are not allowed to travel out of state. It is not paid by the state. I have Tahoe, where many of our meetings are in Nevada, because half of Tahoe, Lake Tahoe is in Nevada. And I'm also on the Oregon border. I'm the only district that has two states that border. So many times we will have meetings just over the border, but it's a meeting that I absolutely need to be at or have staff at, and they're always denied. But on the other side, they are going to D.C. They're going, they go to all kinds of things. They go to, they're allowed that state travel. So, and that's part of it. I'm sure when we were the majority, we did the same thing. That part was just shocking to me.
And it doesn't make it right.
No. And it feels, I actually told them when I first started, I'm like, this feels like discrimination.
It is.
It's really off-putting to me. And they said immediately, being a Republican is not a protected class.
Yeah. You know what? I got to tell you, every time I hear off-putting, all I think about is a Zach Galifianakis, about being off-putting, like pudding, like Jell-O Pops. So anyway, all right. Assemblywoman Hadwick, this has been like a extremely fast half hour, and I will see you this afternoon in studio. Okay. We'll do a face-to-face. Hopefully we'll keep it under 3 hours. No, I'm joking.
But I think
this conversation, I'm excited to pick it back up, but then talk about more of the intricacies of being in office and being our voice. And I am going to just be prepared. I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about the voting process, and then pushing back on California. And then, but I think it's going to be a great conversation. So I'd encourage the listeners here, to go to Vote Kevin Cry on Facebook, and we can have that discussion later. So with that, we're going to take a break, and, Assemblywoman Hadwick, again, from all of us here, at least in Shasta County that are listening, we really appreciate you coming on, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you. We'll see you later.
You bet. We'll be right back.
I'm Jack Potter Jr., Tribal Chairman for Redding Rancheria. We've proudly partnered with the Redding Rodeo Association for Native American Appreciation Night. As you know, our roots and hearts are here in this community and are proud of this partnership. From grants to help local businesses and government, to making health care available to so many, to our own community events like the Stillwater Powwow that happens right here on this same land, Redding Rancheria is proud to play our part.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
It was on the streets of Pinar del Rio. You remember the smell of her hair. You thought, white gardenias. You shared dinner, then coffee. Then came that beautiful aroma of the cigar. You forgot her name, but not the cigar. La Roma de Cuba, mi amor. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
No pensé que fueras.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
I'm Nathan with the Redding Trail Alliance, and we're here at the Redding Bike Park. We just want to thank the Redding Rancheria for all the help they've given us over the years supporting the many projects we're doing for our community.
Hi, I'm Dan, and this is Donna, and we're with Wings of Angels.
And we'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for their continued support over the years to our foundation.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
All right, we are back again. This is Kevin Cry. This is my show, broadcasting live, Heart of District 196.5 FM, 1460 AM, or online. From what I understand, is there has been some issues with the online. The online stream. So again, if you're getting in here late, this will be archived on my page, votekevincry.com. You can click on the archive, listen to the whole thing. Really appreciate Assemblywoman Hadwick coming on. And again, if you have some questions for her, feel free to text me, message me, get a hold of me, and I can ask her some of those questions. I put something on my Vote Kevin Cry Facebook page a couple weeks ago because of all this redistricting nonsense. Her schedule has been really, really wonky, but she's been very responsive, and we've been in touch about making sure we make that happen. And again, want to really make sure I reiterate this radio show is my private radio show. I pay for it. I don't have any sponsors, so the opinions are that of mine. And do I wear the hat as a supervisor? Absolutely. But I have my own opinions as well that are my opinions as a supervisor, but at the same time, this is my personal radio show. So if you call in and demand to be on air with me, you're crazy because this is my show. And unless, anyway, I'll just leave it at that. So we're going to jump into some of the stuff with the Board of Supervisors, some of the stuff that's upcoming this next week. If you notice on the agenda, we've got a few regular calendar items, quite a few consent calendar items. And again, if you want to call in, this is a great time to ask me some questions that maybe what you want me to ask later, or some questions about our agenda or some things that are happening. That number is 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567. One of the things that Assemblywoman Hadwick had said that kind of gave me a little bit of pause, and I'll be talking to her about this later, but about the strategically, who gets to be loud and who doesn't, and how that works. And I get that because it is very much a team game. Anytime you're working, in a big collective group, and especially when you're definitely the minority in that big collective group, you have to be smart. At the same time, the conversation around like when to push, when not to. And I'll give you an example. Like we've had this alternative custody program. Piece of property, the 90 acres with the city of Redding that we've been working on. Sheriff Johnson brought up, I believe, in January of this year about the possibility of working with the state and getting some funding for a never been seen before campus or program and having it here in Shasta County, the first of its kind. And it really intrigued me because I knew quite some time ago, that we're not getting a new jail. It's just not happening. And I ran on, improving public safety like every politician does. But once I realized, the numbers and I spent, I won't even say copious amounts of time, but I spent enough time with our, brilliant auditor controller, Nolda Short, I realized we're not getting a jail. We'd have to have a 1 cent or greater sales tax that would never sunset. And that's not going to pass in Shasta County. So what are our alternatives? And when the sheriff brought that up, it was very intriguing. So we had talked about it off and on. And then Supervisor Plummer came across the Amity Foundation. And, of course, Sheriff Johnson, myself, and Supervisor Plummer went down to the L.A. area and went to their campus down there. And I met Doug Bond, who's the CEO, and he's a former, he was incarcerated, had some issues as a kid and as a young person, definitely got straightened out. Now he's running the organization. It's a I'm not going to say it's a billion-dollar organization, but it's a hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollar organization. They've got, I believe, three campuses, one in the Long Beach, L.A. area. They have one in San Diego, and then one in, I believe it's Phoenix, or I always mess that up, if it's Phoenix or Tucson or Mesa, Arizona, but there's one in Arizona. And the fourth one, very well, I believe, will be in Shasta County. So here is the point of this. Is we've been going back and forth with the city of Redding about the piece of property we need to do this really, really well. And two or three times we've had what we believed was the finished product, was the agreement, was the handshake. And then the Shasta County would move on it and say, okay, this is great, send it over. And then there was changes, and then there was changes, and then there was changes. And it was very, very frustrating. And for me, I've been very, very loud and outspoken about it. I've talked to council members, Redding City Council members. Haven't spoken to Barry Tippin directly. I know Matt Plummer has. But they're, you know, when, for me, the way I negotiate, when somebody is going to, and this is in my private life, when somebody is going to come with their hands, palms up, very open, very transparent, very, you know, fact-based, but also, you know, you can be passionate, but, you know, still be very, very kind. And when two people understand there's a deal to be made, let's get it done. And the best deals often are made when neither party's like really, really perfectly happy, because that way maybe one doesn't think they're getting something up over the other and there's no hurt feelings and you can still work together. Well, in this process, as the goal lines or as the goalposts have kept changing, I begin to become more and more frustrated because I see what's happening. And there's a big disconnect, I believe, with the city of Redding's council and then their city attorney and their city manager versus how the Board of Supervisors works with our CEO and our county council. And I'll tell you what that difference is. And I'm not saying this is just a recent thing, but I believe it's been systemic where the city manager in Redding has basically run the city council for years. I mean, you're looking at what, you know, we're hearing about the budget process and how that's unfolding. And again, I will talk to different council members and I'll get some different opinions, which that in of itself is a little weird to get such different opinions about the process, but here nor there. But they're kind of kept at bay. They're kept off to the side. And it's like, hey, we'll give you the information as we believe you need it. Now, at the county, ever since I've been there, and especially since CEO Dave Rickert came, and I'll tell you, this is the big difference. CEO Dave Rickert came to us after being a 20-plus year elected official in a county, you know, over twice the size of ours. So he understands what it's like to be an elected official and what those roles are versus what the role of staff is. So when he came here, he basically said, hey, or in his interview, I work for the board. My job is to do everything as legal and I'm paraphrasing this, but as legal and as, fast, as the board wants. So if there's three votes or four votes or five votes in one direction, my job is to carry that out and get it done as fast as possible. And what I realize is if you don't have the three-legged stool, which is a county council, a board, and a CEO working together, that stool doesn't work and neither does government. So I went out and recruited a county council that feels the very same way. And his job is to carry out the will of the board as instructed legally, ethically, and as quickly as possible. And that's why you've seen such turnover and you've seen a whole county council department built around getting the work done that the elected body of the Board of Supervisors wants and also that, trickles down to all the department heads. Cause I would say every department head I've spoke to said, man, I keep becoming more and more impressed with our county council's office, not just Joe Larmer, but all the attorneys and how hard they work, how fast they work, how fast they're turning stuff around. So at the city of Redding, that isn't necessarily how that goes. And with this alternative custody program, what happened at our last meeting is Supervisor Plummer, I believe, finally had enough. And he made a motion off, he pulled something off the consent calendar about the election and saying, hey, we need to get this alternative custody deal done. And I was quite honestly shocked. And he talked to me before the meeting about it. And I said, well, if I brought it up, it would be, you know, hell hath no fury, because here is Supervisor Cry and all the people with, whether you call it Cry derangement syndrome or Kevin derangement syndrome, people would have went nuts if I would have brought it up. But Supervisor Plummer brought it up. And I thought it was, I, it, very, very little catches me off guard. That caught me off guard, but I supported it. Absolutely. And I was pretty vocal about it because I think anything we can do to get this deal done, and this doesn't hurt anybody. This actually greatly helps the city of Reading. And 60 or 65% of our residents in the county jail are from the city of Reading. So it behooves them to get this deal done. So Supervisor Plummer made that. Now, City of Reading then put on a special agenda item to get the language changed. Now, again, was it because of that? Were they going to do it anyway? I don't know that because I will never say what somebody's thinking. I can speculate, and I'm not even going to speculate. In this case, at the end of the day, what happened was our county council and our CEO and their city manager and their city attorney all actually met in person. Now, why they didn't meet in person weeks or months ago, I don't know. And that's frustrating to me. And this is where people, I think, would be a great example of, especially those that know me, that have dealt with me on a personal level. Like I would have got, if I was overextending myself in terms of my role as a supervisor, even as chairman, I would have picked up Joe Larmer at his house, picked up Dave Rickard at his house. I would have drove to the city of Reading. We would have sat in the lobby until we could have got everybody together and got the deal done. And it would have probably happened a month ago. But you got to let the process take its course. And I do know that the four of them, the city manager, city attorney, our county council, and CEO Dave Rickard, all got in a room, hammered it out. I believe Council Larmer was up extremely late, and so was the city attorney cranking out the language. So now what we have on our agenda, we believe, is going to be the final yet again. But I do believe it this time because all four were able to get in a room. And they were able to say, let's agree on this language. Let's put it forward. Let's vote on it. So we're going to vote on it this week. And then on September 2nd, which is my birthday, that'll be a great birthday present to me. And then the city of Reading is supposed to vote on September 2nd and agree to it as well. So then we can start the process of getting that property and we can move forward with the EIR and do all the things that we have to do because Doug Bond, who's the CEO of Amity, is going to be coming in on September 9th. If you remember, he was going to be on an agenda a couple weeks ago. We had a family emergency, which family first all the time. And so he's going to be back on September 9th. Now, he actually may be coming to Reading next weekend. Now, you talk about, and I'm joking with this, so please, people, take this with a grain of salt, but I'm going to be falling on the sword. My birthday week, I'm going to be doing one of the things that is my least favorite things to do is fishing. And, but he's going to come up because he doesn't have time, September 9th to do much sightseeing. He wants to get an idea of the community, who they are. So if you're a fishing guide and, you want to take some people out fishing and talk about the alternative custody program and the impact it can make, let me know. And we need to go. I need to take this guy fishing because he loves the outdoors. He likes fishing. And we have obviously the lake, a couple lakes, and then the Sacramento River. And it's beautiful. And I want Doug to see firsthand why our area is the place for this new concept of a way to help people turn their lives around. So I'll be doing that next weekend, assuming that he's going to be able to keep that schedule and come up. All right. So that's the alternative custody program, and I really think, we have to bully some things through once in a while and just get it done. You get paid for done. You get paid for completion. Nobody cares about your feelings. They care about outcomes, and too many people, I think, are really soft on that. And what happens is they're so soft and sensible, they actually miss the opportunity, and we're not going to miss this opportunity. So thank you to all the parties, all five City of Reading Council people, as well as my fellow board members, as well as all the staffs to get this done. All right, so moving on to some other items on our agenda that I do want to talk about. If you look on the consent calendar under Health and Human Services, there's C10, which says approve a retroactive renewal agreement with Wayfinder Family Services for helping to locate and engage relatives and assist with establishing or maintaining family connections for youth in foster care. And now as I've read the staff report and I'm understanding some of that, if you just look at that, on its face, just about when you think about we have, kids, and not just in this community, but across the world, that there's money being spent to help locate and engage relatives. Now, if you're a parent or, you know, or an aunt and uncle, or, you know, some kids in general. Think about, like, how bad that is, that there actually has to be government money spent on engaging family members to make them aware or give them updates or keep them in touch with family. And sometimes when I see these consent calendar items, it's really, really like, it's just like a punch in the gut, or it's a real eye opener. Like, I'm well aware, especially with, you know, all the different camps and things that I do in my private life, in my private businesses with California Adventure Camps or Ninja Coalition or the gym here, that I know there's a lot of kids suffering that don't have the same opportunities as others. But when you see it like in print on a government document like this, it really hits home, and it's really, really hard for me. So I'm thinking about pulling C10. I don't know that I will. I may just have to reach out to a staff and ask some clarifying questions, but people need to understand that, and I get caught up in this as well, that what I would say see as normal is not everybody else's normal. And to you know, take a step back and realize that everybody is fighting some type of battle that you may not know. And when I see that with kids, it's just really hard. So I don't know. I just wanted to highlight that, because if you've got any experience with the Wayfinder Family Services, or you know anybody who's, you know, in that predicament, please reach out to me. I'd love to hear some personal stories, how that process could possibly be made better, more efficient, streamlined, or maybe it's actually running, you know, at full capacity and there's no changes needed. But I would really like to, you know, hear some stories if anybody has anything. And then I want to jump really quickly to the medical town hall I'm having on September 16th. I'm getting a lot of feedback. Again, that's a private event because I have to pay for it. It's not a county-sponsored event, but that's something I'm doing as a private individual. So if you, and I think there's a few even spots left, because what I'm going to do is, I decided to, you know, take a given number and then do a lottery system, from there. So, if you're interested, go to votekevincry.com, sign up for that, and then you'll get an email about, next steps for that. But, also please send in your, stories, some things that you would like covered, or some items that you feel are really important that the public needs to be more aware of, or take a greater or deeper dive into that. The other item I really want to mention, from the agenda, sorry, is I want to talk briefly about what I want to continue to do is I want to bring people together. And you'll notice we had a charter survey that I was going to be bringing forward, and I pulled it this last meeting, and it's not on this agenda. It's probably going to be on September 9th. And for some of you that are asking about about that, you know, that's still coming back. I definitely want our county to be able to, and when I say our county, our citizens to be more engaged with the process of what the legal process is to amend the charter. Now, when you talk about the legal process to amend the charter, you're going to be made aware of just what that process looks like once it was voted in March of 24, what that process has been since. So the agenda item on the 9th is going to walk through what's transpired since the vote of March 2024 and where we are today. So that's still coming back, but I really want people to I really want people to begin thinking, and I would encourage you to look at other charters of other counties, like San Bernardino is a great one. It's got 80 some items, I believe, on it, and understand what we can do and what we can't do with a charter, because it's very, very important that we get public input, and this can't just be myself. I mean, granted, I'm the one that did the charter originally. I sponsored it myself. Didn't have anybody else on it with me, and it's not my baby. It's something that I did for all of us. And now that we're a charter county that we voted on anyway in 2024, we can build on that. And I saw what was happening with the governor and our state and even our country a long time ago. So this redistricting stuff isn't really surprising to me, because the very, very short time I was in politics, by that time I really realized that the state was coming for us and has been coming for us. And I wanted to take a quick and decisive action in separating ourselves as fast as we could. And then knowing that the governor would have the ability to appoint in our county if a supervisor vacated office, whether by death, by moving, by resignation, or by recall, that we would get that opportunity. Because you remember when the successful recall of Leonard Modi, they had an election, so you got to actually pick your person. But if that had taken place in under these rules, then what happens is, you know, if or when Supervisor Modi was recalled, then the governor would get to put somebody right back in there, and it would probably be somebody very in line with what Supervisor Modi's politics appeared to be. And I never sat with him, so I can't articulate every vote he made or even personally how he felt about things. But I do know that how we handled COVID in Shasta County is clearly, clearly different than if COVID happened today. I mean, I, as the chair, would not remove the seats and lock everybody out. It would basically be, you know, play at your own risk. If you want to come in, come in. If you don't, you don't. But hindsight's 20/20. But I believe the way people, you know, act in moments of crisis like that is really who they are deep down. And I think there's many of us that are at our best in moments of crisis because we can make decisions and we can live by them. And I'll be the first to admit, when I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And I'm okay with that. So the last item I'm going to hit on that's actually on the agenda is the elections information. Man, I'm sorry. You'll see that we have R6 and R7. R6 is under the county clerk and elections. It's still about approving that $125,000. If you watched our last meeting, three of us are there now. Supervisor Plummer is very, very close. There's some items that he was still asking for in terms of a schematic layout. I know that the clerk, Clint Curtis, is meeting with IT, I believe, this week before the meeting at some point, and they're going to be discussing some of those IT requirements. And if Supervisor Plummer, if what has been given to him is sufficient, then he will vote, and that does need a 4/5 vote. So I would encourage anybody that wants to respectfully reach out to Supervisor Plummer about allocating that $125,000 to the elections to voice that, but do it respectfully, because at the end of the day, he's an elected official. He'll make the decision that he thinks is best for himself and the district he represents, as well as the entirety of Shasta County. I'm very for that. I think that's a very small dollar amount to give Clint Curtis the ability to do what he's looking to do. And then you'll see on R7 discuss the potential locations for temporary use, and that would be for the consolidated statewide election. So we would we're looking to have the location a greater location so we can turn Market Street maybe into a ballot counting location, and then moving some of the ROV voting machines and things like that off the site. I think that's where we're going to kind of land, but that's a conversation. Again, this is something you'll see. The reason it's on the agenda, and I'm being somewhat vague, is I can only talk to one supervisor. So this is going to be a discussion. And so I don't know where this is going to go, but I really feel it's important to give any elected official the tools they need necessary, and especially one that's only been in office a very, very short time. And it's not like he has the ability to, you know, run five elections so people can see the process. Like, he gets really one shot at this before his own election next summer, which there will be an election at the same time. And I think this is a chance to prove, yay or nay, that this can work. And again, and when you look at, and jumping back to Texas and the redistricting, and what's kind of going on there with some of the conversations, if you look at Aaron Anderson, if you Google Aaron Anderson, that's E-R-I-N and Anderson, and if you go to Texas, it's the Texas, it was a Texas state. Anyway, she's a journalist, and she did a whole thing on how Texas can require voter ID on mail ballots, and the federal court ruled that. So what's really, I think, important for everybody to understand is that the sanctity of voting, that conversation isn't going away. It's only going to heat up, and I think it's only more relevant and relevant. And if, you know, us as a country want what we keep getting, we're going to keep doing what we've always done. And I think there's a better way to look at it. Obviously, this administration, the Trump administration, is for making some improvements. So let's keep that conversation going. With that, everybody have a great week and tune in to Vote Kevin Cry for the Heather Hadwick extended interview very, very shortly. Have a great week.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.